The purpose of Wealth Talk is to educate, inform, and hopefully entertain you on the subject of building your wealth. Wealth Builders recommends you should always take independent financial, tax, or legal advice before making any decisions around your finances.
Welcome to episode 29 of Wealth Talk. My name is Christian Rodwell, the Membership Director of Wealth Builders, and I'm joined by my side by Mr. Kevin Whelan.
Hello, Chris. Welcome to my haunt in London. And as you'll appreciate, in London, it's a busy spot, so you'll hear a few people and a bit of clanking over the wooden floors. But
we made it. We're live, aren't we, today?
We're live.
Live and we're in location.
Live and ready to go.
Okay, good. So, Kevin, episode 29 today, and we continue with the property pillar.
Yeah.
And we're now having a look at the strategy known as serviced accommodation.
Yep, serviced accommodation. Well, that's a very interesting strategy, and it's definitely worthwhile giving a little bit of a foundation to that one, Chris, because, you know, for many people, serviced accommodation is kind of language they don't know. And it's really language invented by the property industry, because there is no technical definition. It's just really thinking about the creativity of being in property and understanding that property is space, and there's a different demand and use of that space. You know, so we talked about in previous episodes, you could take a property and you could rent it to a single family.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. You know, you've got a language there, buy to let, assured, short hold tenancies, that kind of thing. And then we talked about HMOs, and other people talk about minimos and maximos and all sorts of language, but HMO, multiple occupancy properties, is kind of letting rooms, mm-hmm. you know, but still for the longer term, almost like a home from home for different types of tenant types. And service accommodation is just taking the same space, you know, and instead of renting things for the long term, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, it's looking at that space almost in the way that you would look at a guest house or in a hotel or an apartment. You're giving somebody who would occupy that space usually a much shorter term, comparing it a little bit like a hotel in some respects, in that it's shorter term. You tend to be there for shorter terms, but also it has the benefits of being a bit like a home. So for many people, for example, one of the reasons they would look at a serviced accommodation, it's accommodation they can live in, but it's taken care of like a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of that language, if you could just read into that, serviced, and it's accommodation.
Yeah.
Well, service means you've got to deliver great service, so you have to be in business. And this is a step change. You know, if you've got an apartment and your renters are buy to let, you can be a novice, you can be a landlord, you can be an investor.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into serviced accommodation, shorter term lets, you've got a whole host of things you have to learn. You know, not just delivering the service, but how the hell do you get the customers in the first place? Mm-hmm. What's your tenant type? How do you think about that? You know, is it corporate? Is it leisure? Where's the location? Is it suited? Is there a demand for people who would want to rent for a short term? The big plus of it, actually two massive, that's three, but two anyway. One is the cash flow, if you get the occupancy level right, and I think most people would work on a kind of 70% occupancy. But if you get that right, the cash flow is really strong, because people will pay comparably more per night than they would if they were renting for a year.
Mm.
So it tends to be a premium price. That's why you need to put in the service. So you've got the costs of all the things that go alongside that. But the other thing is, because it's a business, it's a service business, like a hotel is a business, then it sits outside of this Section 24. In other words, the tax position is not affected. It's the business, so all of your expenses will be tax deductible, and all of your revenue is liable for tax. But either way, you're not, as a person, going to be affected in the same way. So
it's a huge advantage.
Big advantages, but you have to regard it as a business. So like every strategy, Chris, pros, cons.
Mm.
And the best way to dive into those pros and cons is to listen to some of our clients and members who are using this strategy, maybe some of them accidentally, you know, but the key thing is finding the demand, and we'll maybe dive into some of that afterwards and see what their lessons were in terms of their tenant types?
I think so. And just before we do that, another little piece of language that often crops up alongside service accommodation is this term rent to rent.
Rent to rent, yeah.
And I think we'll hear from some of our guests as well, if there's a difference, what exactly is that difference?
Yeah, they're completely different. Rent to rent is a method by which you would find a property. You know, so in other words, for most people, if they're thinking about wealth in the pillar of property, the method by which they would turn that property into income is to own the property. So you physically buy it, you physically own it, you know, whether you own it in your pension through a SAS or whether you own it personally or whether you run it in a company, you've got the ownership of the asset. Now, clearly that's the best thing to do, because if you own the asset, you own the right to that cash flow forever. Rent to rent then is a method by which you secure the right to get an income from a property, and if you get it wrong, to meet an expense of the property, because you're essentially renting the property from somebody else who owns it. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole host of reasons why people would choose rent to rent, which can be serviced accommodation, just as rent to rent could be an HMO. You know, so there's really, rent to rent is more just a way of getting into the market to get some
controlling the property.
Yeah, but never really owning it. Yeah. But for some people who don't have enough capital, then getting rent to rent, which means you don't have to buy the property, so you're not going to pay stamp duty, you're not going to incur those costs. But the corollary to that, Chris, is you're going to have to spend more time finding those motivated sellers. Mm. If you remember Simon Zucci's golden rule number one,
yes,
you know, you've got to find motivated sellers. So the skill there is different.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why this is a very, very interesting pillar, and the multiple strategies, and they overlap.
Mm.
Hence, is rent to rent the same as HMO? Is rent to rent the same as service accommodation? Not at all. One's a method of occupying a property temporarily, where you're usually 3 to 5 years, and you're using that space from somebody else. You're paying them a fee, but then you're hoping to get more cash flow by increasing the premium on which you're charging for that space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's being creative, and which is, again, if you look back at podcast 28, Kevin McDonald, all about being creative. And this is the skill of being in business, in property, is being creative.
Mm. So just as we heard in last week's episode around HMOs, different niche markets,
yep,
that can be targeted. Again, we will hear from our guest today in the same way that service accommodation can be tailored to different markets as well.
Yes, and you know, I'm pleased to have worked with some of these people to help work with them to discover their niche and master their niche, because it's really, really important in service accommodation when you're putting all of your energy, you know, into... You need technology, you need to understand, you know, where your bookings can come from. You need to then manage all of these things. So all of this stuff becomes all part of your education, and you need to spend time in that space, getting that education right. So who better to start thinking about that than people who are doing it, who've mastered Danish?
Well, why don't we hand it over to them to share their stories now? I'm with Wealth Builders client Ian McBain. How are you, Ian?
Very well, Christian. Nice to hear from you again.
Yeah, good to speak to you, Ian. Now, Ian, you've been on focusing on the property pillar for a number of years, and for the last few years, specifically on service accommodation. So would you mind sharing why you decided to focus on that strategy in particular?
Sure, absolutely. We are in Southend-on-Sea in Essex, and obviously it's a fairly big leisure market in the summer and a corporate market in the winter. And what had actually happened, Christian, we had a buy-to-let property next to Southend Airport, and we wanted to sweat that asset, so we trialled it as a serviced accommodation unit, which means that, you know, we were kind of renting it out by the night, by the week, and by the month, and obviously the cash flow that we achieved was far greater than what we would as a normal buy-to-let.
Mm-hmm. And we often hear the term rent-to-rent and service accommodation side by side. But would you mind clarifying, Ian, because I know you cater for both markets, exactly what the difference is and how you approach and choose those individual strategies?
Sure, absolutely. So if you want to get into the market fairly swiftly, then obviously you can offer the landlord, a landlord, a guaranteed rent. And that is what is known as rent to rent. So let's just use yourself, Christian, as an example for the listeners. Let's say you had a property, I wanted to rent it off you. I would guarantee your rent at this market rent for the next 3 to 5 years. That's a normal length of contracts that we work with. This has been going on for years, incidentally, rent to rent. And then obviously once you've secured the property, it's up to you how you want to operate it. So do you want to operate it as serviced accommodation? So I'd be guaranteeing you your rent. I'd be running it as serviced accommodation as a strategy. And obviously after rent and after bills, what is left is the profit that I would keep effectively, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in terms of the market that you aim for, do you have a particular niche that you tend to focus on?
That's a great question. Yes, we obviously try and target the corporate market. Serviced accommodation, like a lot of businesses, does suffer from seasonality. So in the summer, you know, it's game on. There's loads of tourists and it's really busy. But in the winter, it can tail off. But if you target the corporate market, then, you know, there's no seasonality in the corporate world. It works all round the year. So we try and get on some corporate sites. There's a lot of construction and development work going on in the local area. And our goal is to target that specific demographic. And that way, you've got kind of guaranteed income throughout the winter, and it keeps your profitability much higher. Your costs are lower because you don't have to do as many cleans. You don't have as many laundry. You maybe not have booking fees. You don't have card processing fees because you can just deal with the company directly. So if you're listening to this episode and thinking, you know, how should I do it, then I would say you definitely want to be adding the corporate arm to your strategy.
Mm. And in terms of time, now a lot of people might look at the service accommodation model and think, oh, it can be systemized, you know, it's pretty hands-off. What's the reality in?
The honest answer is it can be systemized, but it is a job at the start. It's hard work. It is a proper business as well. So I think people get sucked in by the cash flow. Yes, there is great cash flow, but obviously your turnover costs are higher. So you've got cleaners, you've got handymen, you need an accountant, a bookkeeper. There's loads of different things that, you know, can happen and go wrong because obviously you've got people coming in and out the property a lot quicker. So I think a lot of people, as a proper business, there's got to be marketing behind it. There's a science behind it. There's technology as well that you can utilise. The property itself is just the vehicle to operate the strategy. But behind the strategy of rent to rent or serviced accommodation, it's a proper business.
Mm. And for that reason, then, would you say that it's probably not a strategy for someone right at the beginning of their property journey?
It's a good question. Obviously, we started it with probably little or no education and found out the hard way. But I think if you're going to start it, you should just do one and do all the tasks yourself to find out how long they take and exactly what's involved in it before you try and outsource it. I mean, it's on a lot of the property forums, you see people saying, oh, just outsource this and get rid of that and done that. Well, it's always better, I feel, yourself to understand everything so you know exactly when you outsource it, how measurable it is.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thanks so much for sharing with us today, Ian.
No problem. Pleasure.
I'm with Wealth Builders Foundation member Adrian Taylor. Welcome to Wealth Talk, Adrian.
Hi, Christian.
Adrian, can you explain for our listeners the process that you followed to acquire your properties?
It's really just a case of approaching lots of landlords and finding one who understands or is open to be explained to about the whole concept of serviced accommodation. As well as that, when you're starting up, you really need to get your systems in place right from the start. So we use a channel manager, which is called Coquit. There's several other programs out there that do exactly the same thing as Coquit, and they've all got their individual upsides and downsides. And the reason for the channel manager is it manages all your bookings. So especially when you start out, you're going to be getting a lot of bookings from the likes of Booking.com, Airbnb and Expedia. And you need to manage your bookings on all three of those simultaneously. So that's where the channel manager comes in. It sits in the middle of them and it updates calendars on each platform as soon as the booking comes in from any one of them, or from yourself. I mean, as someone gets more advanced, they will start getting repeat bookings, direct bookings coming in, so you can have those in as well.
And is there a particular market that you aim for?
We aim largely for the business customer. So we've set up our properties in areas where we've got a lot of business clients around the area. So there's large business parks that are bringing in business guests that are coming to the area. We can have them staying in our properties, but they'll actually be working a fair distance away because there's good motorway links and they can get all around the Bristol area from staying in our property, which is good for generating a longer term booking. In terms of long term, I'm meaning a month.
Now, with this strategy, you're not owning the asset, so I'm presuming it's the ability to generate cash flow that you can then reinvest into other assets, which is what attracts you to this model?
That's correct. Yeah, it's a great way of cash flowing the property while still paying the landlord their normal rent. So they're happy, they've got a good long-term tenant who's looking after the property, sending a cleaner in once a week to clean the property, making sure everything's in perfect condition, carrying out minor little bits of maintenance. So it keeps the landlord happy, and we charge what's very close to what the hotels are charging in the area for the property, for a room, if you like. So we're getting a lot more coming in than the money going out to the landlord. And I should also mention the guests like that as well, because they're paying a similar amount to the pay for the hotel, but they're getting their own private space. They get a kitchen. They can go and cook if they want to cook. Although there's plenty of takeaways, so they don't have to cook.
Sounds good. Thanks very much for sharing, Adrian.
Thank you, Christian. Thanks for inviting me on.
So I'm with Wealth Builders client Ian Morton. Welcome to Wealth Talk, Ian.
Hello there.
So Ian, I know you've been involved in property for a number of years, but more recently focusing on the service accommodation strategy. So would you mind telling us how you kind of got into that, please?
Yeah, well, it was almost by default, really. I actually bought a lovely house in the Lake District and as a summer just to go for weekends, and extended it and did all sorts of alterations and really realized that I ought to rent it out. So I ended up doing a business by default, really, in that way. And I'm also sort of also commercial conversions. So I've done loads of alterations to buildings and new builds. So I merged the two things together, really, and thought maybe I should do serviced accommodation as a business.
Mm. So tell us in your own words exactly what serviced accommodation is and how that model differs from something like buy-to-lets or HMOs.
Right. Yeah. Well, I initially started out with my commercial conversions, converting into single lets. And I've also followed the strategy of HMOs. But yeah, it differs in the respect of really the management side of it is quite intense and needs, it's a much higher skill set that you need to be able to manage serviced accommodation. You're basically dealing with almost hotel customers, you know, who want really to know that you care about them.
Mm. And what would be the typical timeframes that people would be booking into your apartments for, Ian?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing and why sometimes the banks are not as happy as they are with some of the other strategies is that it's almost a very much last booking, you know, last minute booking. So you can often, if you look too far ahead, you can start worrying. But all of a sudden, all the bookings come in. I mean, since we've opened, we've been open with this apart hotel that we've done for about 18 months, and it is consistently full. You know, I often thought I'd love to go there myself, and I can't actually get in there because it's just full all the time.
Yeah. And where are you finding the bookings, or how are people booking themselves into those?
Yeah, well, initially we used booking.com as our main marketing and Airbnb. But then as soon as we get the customers, we try and get them to book direct with us. Hopefully nobody from booking.com is listening. and by that, we've already built up, I think it's about 65% direct bookings. There's also local businesses that book. But we have a core of foreign visitors as well. So we get people from, I mean, there's literally one room where French people book all the time. We've got Chinese people. It's just from all over the world.
Yeah. And is there anything you do differently or uniquely with your apartments to stand out, would you say, Ian?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah. So what we've always worked on, in fact, Kevin was fundamentally actually getting this idea together, is it's all based on heritage, really. So we take heritage buildings and convert them inside into contemporary apartments. And so, especially foreign visitors, but also you're getting something special. So you're in, you maybe a beautiful listed building like a Georgian merchant house or a church or a school that's been converted, and you go inside and it's, you know, quite a sleek modern apartment.
Mm. And am I correct to think that you might be utilising one of the other pillars as well to help with this process?
To the pillar do you mean?
Well, I'll test your knowledge of the pillars here. If I would say pillar two... Pensions.
You've done me with pillar two. What is pillar two?
It'd be the pension pillar.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I use SAS pensions. Yeah, so I funded the apart hotel using my own SAS pension. that was the first time. I'd also bought property with a SIP, actually. So I converted from a SIP into a SAS pension. So quite heavily, and always I've been interested in pensions because I love the idea of people having control over their own pension. And then from that, I've moved on to a sort of much bigger project now, which is involved using other people's SAS pensions. So they're people are investing into the company, and they're also investing loans as well to the company. So different types of ways of investing your SAS pension. And I'm putting a pot of my own money in there as well to, you know, to put some skin in the game. And from that, it's a very big scheme that we're doing. We're looking for further investors as well to come along.
Sounds good. And how do you see the future of this market, of this strategy, Ian?
Yeah, well, we've sort of ended up specialising more, moving more towards, instead of city centres, which are actually getting quite overwhelmed with the amount of serviced accommodation they have, we've moved into a sort of a different market. We believe there's going to be a big, strong staycation with everything that's going on. I won't mention the B word. But everything that's going on and the currency thing. So it's going to be quite cheap for foreign visitors to come to the UK, see some of our beautiful historic buildings and the fantastic scenery we've got, as well as the staycation people. So we've got that market that we're aiming at, which we believe is going to be, you know, massive growth. I mean, just as a for instance, the Chinese market, only 5% of the population ever leave China, but by 2025, it's going to be 15%. So it's a massive market of people that are going to want decent quality accommodation in the UK.
Mm. That's great. Thanks so much for sharing with us today, Ian.
Okay, no problem at all. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Hey, I'm with Wealth Builders Foundation member Lee Pemberton. Welcome to Wealth Talk, Lee.
Thank you, Christian. Thank you very much.
So, Lee, could you give our listeners a little background as to how you got started with this strategy?
Yeah, certainly, yeah. First of all, thank you so much for inviting me on to the podcast, Christian. I really, really appreciate that. Service accommodation for me, I've been focused on as an investment strategy for the past 20 years. Very briefly, I came from a hotel background prior to that. And then over the past 20 years, I have developed a whole range of, if you like, models under serviced accommodation. So when I started off, it was very much along the lines of, I mean, there was nobody doing serviced accommodation, obviously, 20 years ago. There was no booking.com, Airbnb or anything. So I literally started by renting a property off of a landlord and then letting it out on a nightly basis. That's how I started. And it was only really a couple of years ago that I came across this model called Rent to Rent. And so I didn't realize it actually had a name, a label to it. But over the years, as technology has improved and booking.com and Airbnb and different platforms for guests to book through have come along, it's really opened up a lot of opportunity. So you know, it's great to kind of sit here now 20 years later and see that this model has really developed, not just throughout the UK, but throughout the world.
Is there a particular market that you focus on, Lee?
Yeah. So do you know what's really interesting, Christian, is that the market hasn't really changed. So when I first started, my whole aim was to focus on corporate clients because they stay with you slightly longer and then you fill the gaps with your leisure guests. That was always like my sort of strategy. So corporates Monday to Thursday, leisure guests Friday through to Sunday. And that really maximizes like the return you get on your property. So where things have changed is that, you know, the government have done a great job of like really messing up the whole buy-to-let setup. And so, you know, Section 24 is now in play where existing landlords that have properties on a buy-to-let basis are no longer able to claim their mortgage interest relief payments back. I mean, this is the final year now that's being phased out. We've serviced, if the property is managed as a serviced accommodation or a furnished holiday let under HMRC's terms, they can actually sit outside of Section 24. So there's a great opportunity for existing buy-to-let landlords to be able to have their properties managed as serviced accommodation, where they can get a higher cash flow and obviously be able to also be able to claim their tax, you know, continue to claim their tax back. So that's a big opportunity. There's some other really key kind of tax advantages around capital allowances and being able to claim back things like your kitchens and bathrooms and electricals and all those things that happen within the property. Because it's a operational business that you're running, you're able to claim a lot of these costs back through capital allowances. So there's some real attractions there for landlords. But at the same time, legislation is definitely getting more strict throughout the UK. With the success of Airbnb, there's a lot of restrictions now slowly starting to come into play. So I think although I've seen a massive growth in the last 20 years, there's some great opportunities around tax, of working with tax. But at the same time, there's definitely some challenges coming our way and some threats when it comes to legislation and stuff. So like for me, the focus is really looking at like, you know, the next 20 years and seeing where is this hospitality business going? And that's really what I'm focused on now.
Is service accommodation a strategy that would suit a first-time investor, or do you recommend having previous experience in property?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So look, there's some great tools and there's lots of training. There's lots of information out there in terms of how to, if you're an investor, you own a property, let's say you've got your single let property you've been letting out and you want to create more cash flow from that as a strategy and run it as service accommodation, you can get yourself set up on booking.com and Airbnb and you can manage the guests. It's quite straightforward, so to speak, how to do that. I think the key thing that is really important to understand, like with everybody that I work with clients and investors and what have you, is you've got to really understand what your strategy is. So do you, like, I'm a people person and I really enjoy looking after guests. Like that's what I've always done. I come from a hotel background and I love service. So you need to understand as an investor, as your strategy, do you enjoy doing that? And it's no problem if you don't. So you may want to become more the investor and you invest and create, if you like, serviced accommodation units, which could be like, say, a block of apartments or a single let unit. And then you then hand them over to a management company that does enjoy that part. So I think the key thing is really, Christian, is understanding, investors have to understand, like, do they want to be kind of front facing? Or do they want to be sort of more in the background and create the product? And then you can structure a really good deal around that between, you know, who you're working with, if you like, along those lines.
So Lee, do you see any potential threats to this strategy moving forwards?
Yeah. So as I've already mentioned, I think legislation, I think, you know, local authority, you know, let's be honest, you know, they have no money. We're living in a very uncertain time at the moment. We don't know what's going to happen. Are we going to go into recession? What's going to happen to Brexit? And I think on a local authority basis, they're going to be looking at ways to create more money. So creating a license around Airbnb and short lets, I think, will naturally happen. It makes sense for that to happen. So for me, what I'm now focused very much on is purchasing with my investors small guest houses, traditional B&Bs. We are buying those properties because they have the correct planning class. They have the C1 planning class. So on most properties, they would be C3, which is residential. And that's where I think there's going to be a restriction. But C1 is B&Bs, small hotels. So I'm focused with my investors on purchasing those properties. We're repurposing the space, taking out the owner's accommodation, the kitchen, dining area. And we're kind of bringing them back to life within the local community, local coffee shops, restaurants, and encouraging guests to use those. And then just by using latest technology, so as an example, Amazon Alexa Hospitality, to be able to greet guests upon arrival, it means that we can create with these lovely small boutique hotels a self-service check-in approach that gives the guests nice flexibility, but within the local community of where they're going to be staying. So for me, there is a threat there. And my focus now working forward with investors and joint venture partners is very much along those lines on boutique smart hotels.
Thanks a lot, Lee.
That's okay. You're very welcome.
Right. Well, we heard a number of different strategies, but, you know, ways of approaching service accommodation there from our guests. So what were some of the key lessons that you picked up on, Kevin?
Well, I think the inevitable one that you should really pick up straight away is that this is a business. Mm-hmm. You know, every one of these individuals have chosen this as a business strategy and to generate high levels of cash flow. And they're not doing it by accident. They're not doing it by a hobby. They're doing it as a profession because it's very profitable. Mm. And they've all built the necessary, you know, they've turned the wheel. You know, they've worked out their niche. They've gone to see things sometimes by accident. Some of them have actually really worked hard to build on existing knowledge they've had before. So, you know, they've used their own skill and their wealth dynamic. Lee Pemberton, for example, yeah. You know, talks very specifically about that. So this is, it's a real business idea. So it isn't something you can have a go at.
Mm.
It's something you have to commit to.
Yeah. And we've covered on earlier episodes, you know, the importance of thinking like an entrepreneur. And we heard a couple of examples there, how it began with just a buy-to-let and then spotting the opportunity and adapting to the market.
That's right. So that's when you know, we heard from the HMO guy last week, you know, talk about pivoting.
Mm,
you know,
Chris,
from Chris, yeah, Chris, yeah, P, from student to young professional. And you can see that this happens here. So the thing to recognize is just doing something, being in the market of building your wealth and being sensitive to changes in timing and opportunity, you can pivot and leverage up. Mm. Whereas if you keep thinking, but not doing, you can't pivot anywhere. You just go spinning again. Mm. But it's really clear, though, that these gentlemen have all taken on board that this is a business. And remember, not all of them are fully just in service accommodation. It's not all my cards are in the service accommodation thing. They're all flexible enough to move in different directions.
Mm.
So that's important, too, to recognize their positioning. They're telling us about their service accommodation plan, but that's not what they just do.
Mm. That's right. Well, we heard from Ian McBain first, and Ian did stress again about it is a business. And a good point that Ian made was you should really get your hands dirty and understand all the aspects of it before outsourcing. So I asked him, you know, who is this strategy for? Can anyone come in at any stage? And I think that was a really good point.
I think it's a really interesting point because this constant challenge I have when people are learning their wealth is they'll prejudge that they don't want to manage anything. You know, it's almost like you hear the word passive. I want to be passive. You can't be passive. And in service accommodation, you can't be passive. You have to know what needs to happen. For example, you need to understand what actually happens in the process of changing the room over, you know, from one tenant to the next tenant. It's not every 6 months, every 12 months. It could be every day. So you need to know what goes on in order to then determine how you want that to be managed. So having some experience of the management is really key to then working out how do you want to get that managed for you so that it supports you in the long term. So you can't start with no management. I would say get your hands dirty, as Ian probably say it. And the other thing about Ian is, you know, this is a kind of double tenant type. You know, you've got the workers during the week and the, what did you say, the tourists at the weekend, you know, but that's Ian, you know, because he's in Southend, you know, so that's a seaside town, right?
Yeah.
Would that work in Coventry? I'm not sure, you know.
And it was a point picked up again by Lee later on about, you know, really aiming at the corporates during the week and then having the leisure guests at the weekend.
Exactly. And, you know, they just come at it from different places. You know, on this particular podcast, Chris, but one of the people that I know who's doing service accommodation is actually got a passion for music, right? So concerts.
Right.
And he knows that people love concerts, music concerts, and attending live gigs and events. So he's got a service accommodation strategy that's entirely driven around the proximity to where major gigs are held. And that's a great strategy, you know, but that's reflection of who they are and what their interests are, which is why it's really quite important if you can think about, if you have a natural interest that you already like you're already good at, you're already experienced in, and then turn that into a reflection of how you do your business.
Mm. So continuing then the theme of the management, we then heard from Adrian, and Adrian talked about some of the systems that he uses, the software systems to manage, you know, Booking.com, Airbnb, Expedia.
Yeah.
So he talked about something called a channel manager. What's this all about, Kevin?
Well, it's not a TV tuning station, right? So it isn't another Netflix. Channel managing is really all about using technology to have an interface with where people can make bookings, so it's seamless. You know, can you imagine if you were just sitting on the phone all day waiting for someone from Booking.com or Expedia or any, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of what we call OTAs, online travel agencies. You know, and the three big ones were mentioned there, you know, Booking.com, Late Rooms, mm-hmm. Expedia, Airbnb.
Yeah.
You know, there's many, many more. And as we'll hear from, maybe we'll, don't forget to mention Ian Morton, who talked about overseas guests, you know, so there's a different thing. So having something that's like a seamless bit of technology, often low cost, and depending on how many rooms you've got, you can dive in at different levels, like a kind of mini booking system, so it works seamlessly, so you don't spend all your time.
Yeah, because so bookings will be coming in 24/7, right?
24/7, yeah, all different time zones, and you need to be able to manage that and understand that all of these OTAs have got costs associated with them, usually in the sort of 10% to 15%, so you've got to factor that in, and then you need to be able to convey the messages to the, you know, to your cleaning staff to be able to do that, and so there's a whole host of how do people get in, you know, what automatic key system do you have so you don't have to turn up and open the door and let them in, you know, so all of these, this technology is quite key when you've got a regular turnover of staff and people, and it's not like you've got a hotel reception desk, you need to automate this, so using technology and learning what that technology is and choosing the right technology. You know, and we've got the people who know what that technology is. So if anybody's interested in looking into service accommodation, you don't have to do all this by trial and error.
Mm. And we talked last week on the episode about HMOs, about proximity. You know, are you students? You know, where are you going to be situated and located? And right. We're hearing the same here with service accommodation. And Adrian mentioned about their properties being close to motorways. So good transport links for workers to get in and out.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that needs to be considered as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's well thought through, isn't it? So, you know, where we've got seaside towns, it kind of becomes a bit obvious, you know, almost like holiday type accommodation where you've got workers. And again, that's another key point. If you happen to have a link or knowledge with a key employer, you know where they are, you know where they're going to be, or you know where there's a demand, you can see what's happening, then you can use service accommodation to have some, you know, workers coming for a few days, you know, and what imagine being a worker working on a big building project. Do you want to stay in a hotel and, you know, have to go down to the lounge and have a beer and have, you know, rubbish food? Or do you want to be able to relax, you know, cook your own food, have a few people around, maybe several workers together?
Yeah.
So it's cheaper, isn't it, really, when you've got 2, 3, 4 people. It can be a cheaper accommodation than having 3 or 4 hotel rooms, and that applies the same for a family as it does for workers. So for anybody, there's real benefits to service accommodation. I think Adrian has picked his niche very well.
Yeah. Are we potentially seeing a threat to the hotel industry, certainly at that lower level, that more B&B level?
Unquestionably, that's the case. You know, the whole shifting sands of this, and Lee has got that right, hasn't he? You
That's
know,
right.
I love it when I talk to Lee. He's so full of energy, but he talks about sort of, you know, helping and reviving, which is the name of his business, you know, old, tired B&B people and old, tired B&B buildings and turning them into modern, upmarket, you know, much more customer-focused and friendly and automated ways, still bringing the same service and the strength of service, which really goes to what Lee talks about, doesn't he? I know we're jumping ahead a bit to Lee, but Lee is using his wealth dynamic correctly. He's using his experience correctly, his love for service correctly.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of that is good stuff.
Yeah. And Ian Morton, again, mentioned the intensity that comes with the management and the high level of service, which I think we, you know, we've picked up from all of our guests today. But he talked about his niche being the foreign markets. And, you know, seeing a big opportunity here, and, you know, certainly with the pound dropping, we may see that influx of more investors.
Yeah. Ian has got some beautiful properties. I remember spending a whole day with Ian a couple of years ago when he had a different brand. And I looked at his properties and said, Ian, these are beautiful properties. They're like, you know, you would almost have a blue plaque outside the door. This is heritage. This is the type of accommodation that people just feast with their eyes, you know, and he's done an outstanding job of being able to do that, both in terms of the quality of the externals, the quality of the internals. They're beautiful, beautiful properties. And when you put the pictures in all glorious color, as Ian does on overseas websites, he's got a rich opportunity then to attract people who love the British heritage. So instead of just looking at the local market, you know, he's attracting the Chinese market. He can see, and there are special channels where you can take bookings from Chinese guests. So, you know, this isn't something that happened automatically for Ian. This is something that he's grown into and built a team around him to treat this very, very seriously. And I think he's going to do outstandingly well.
Mm. And it seems like we never have an episode go by where the mention of SaaS doesn't pop up.
Well, look, this is all about the interconnection, isn't it, between all of the different pillars. And they all do interconnect. You know, they kind of merge and move. And SaaS is just a way of turning your pension, which traditionally, if you remember, would be stuck in the stock market outside of your control. And now you've got that self-control where you can direct that money to where you want. And if Ian's got a skill in the development of property, and that property is a commercial type property, and he can buy that property and own it using his pension, well, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
You know, he's in control of the risk, he's in control of the cash flow, he's in control of everything. And that's why I think he's been so successful. He's now attracting other people who want to both share in that opportunity and share in the learning. And Ian is a good and warm teacher. So, you know, fair play to him.
Yeah. And I guess just to touch again on the point that you made at the beginning, which Lee made as to some of the tax benefits and, you know, why service accommodation should be, you know, something to consider if you're looking to maximize your cash flow.
Well, look, you know, the skill in wealth building is to be aware of all of the opportunities, all of the tax opportunities, all the legal situations. It's all in the due diligence process and in the education as well. So I think Lee makes the point, you know, helps landlords keep more money. Well, what's wrong with that? You know, if you can do something that you can pivot to one direction, which is tax-free, and another where you're going to pay a lot more tax, why wouldn't you consider it? Because you're just going to make more money. And if you make more money, then it helps you build more wealth.
Mm.
Actually, one other point that's worth mentioning, just going back to Ian Morton, which is a little bit different to channel management, is when you get successful, then you can start encouraging by rating and by using your own website more visitors to book directly with you. So then you're missing out the cost of paying for the booking.coms and so on. But at the beginning, you need them, you know, because they're booking thousands and thousands and thousands of rooms every single day. So why not be part of that technology? But as you get more successful, you can become less reliant on that as a channel and more, you know, doing some of the things yourself.
Well, we always talk about leverage, don't we? You know, it's the starting point when you're looking at how you can build wealth. Where's your point of leverage? And they're leveraging those other platforms at the beginning.
Well, exactly right. And so that's why it's important in your education to know what an online travel agency is, what a channel manager looks like. You know, so like anything, Chris, you know, this is for a novice, this is going to sound like a complicated strategy, but it's just the language, really. It's like anything, you just got to learn how to. And the combination of the people we know and the lessons they've learned, it's easy to share.
Well, I hope that everyone listening today has learned a bit more about the service accommodation strategy.
Yeah.
And where might we be looking in our next episode?
Well, you know, property is still, we're only scratching the surface of property. There's still so many strategies to go. Why don't we dive into the commercial area, you know, and give a feeling where, again, that's genuinely much more tax efficient, looking at dealing with commercial type tenants, and there are some very unique and special benefits in there. How about if you could learn that the tenant pays all the maintenance costs, the tenant pays all the bills, the tenant pays for anything that goes wrong, and the rent only goes up. How would you like to learn about that?
Actually, I couldn't see some people's ears pricking up to the thought of that. So that sounds like a good one to cover off next.
Let's do that next time.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
See ya.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget that we are constantly updating our resources inside the Wealth Builders membership site to help you create, build, and protect your wealth. Head over to wealthbuilders.co.uk/membership right now for free access. That's wealthbuilders.co.uk/membership.